Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising with new topics every single week and jamming you with your daily dose of UFC. We are fresh off of UFC Noche, which I can say I've watched a lot of UFC events this year, ladies and gentlemen. I have watched one too many, some would say, and I can say this has been my favorite fight night main event. Easily, only lasted two rounds, easily my favorite of the year. Better than any five-round main event on a fight night, at least, that I've seen all year. UFC Noche was so much fun. We did go 6-7. I know, I can hear the jokes. We went 6-7 on predictions, so not too hot, but we did predict the main event correctly, which always leaves us on a high note. So on today's episode, we will be recapping all the action from UFC Noche and talking about what is next for not just the UFC, but each and every one of the fighters. Also, we're going to be giving a week 2 recap of the NFL. I was at the Vikings game last night. Safe to say, yeah, rough. Rough time to be a Vikings fan, unfortunately, but it was fun. I went with 3 of my buddies, and sometimes the environment can outbeat how poor, piss poor a game really is. Also going to be giving our Dan Wise Contenders Series Season 9, Episode 6 predictions. That's right, we're already on to Episode 6. We're already over halfway through of this season, and it's been a great season. Season 9 has been producing some great talent, and yeah, lots of other fun stuff on the way. But man, I'm finally done dog sitting for some people, and these dogs were just utterly crazy. And so I'm finally glad to be over with that, and I'm happy to be here talking with you guys today. So let's not waste any time. Let's get right on into some new UFC fights. We have 4 new UFC fights, but briefly, before we discuss new UFC fights, I did want to touch briefly on the Canelo and Crawford fight. So I know that was the big, you know, mixed martial arts, if you will, the big boxing matchup, the big fighting sport thing of the entire weekend, and I did watch the co-main event and the main event. The co-main event featured Callum Walsh, who is Dana White's golden boy of boxing. Yeah, boring. Super bored. I mean, him versus Vargas Jr., whoever he took on. Oh my goodness. I was going to sleep. I was generally going to sleep. It was one of the most boring things I have watched. And then as for Canelo and Crawford, look, it wasn't bad. You know, I get some people are going to say it was bad. It wasn't a bad fight, but it was kind of the cardinal sin of any sports sort of entertainment thing. This goes for movies, TV shows, and especially for MMA and sports in general, like boxing. It was boring at times, and when it's boring, you just don't care. Now, I had it 8-4 for Terrence Crawford. I actually picked Terrence Crawford to win. I didn't really talk about it in the pod just because I completely kind of forgot about it, but I did pick Terrence to win, and everyone was shocked when he won, but the judges had it 8-4 for Terrence for one of them, and the other two had it 7-5 for Terrence Crawford over Canelo. And funny enough, the Verdict MMA app, which I use, you could score the fights, and it was 10-2 in favor of Terrence Crawford. So Terrence Crawford dominates Canelo, not surprised at whatsoever. You know, I don't know much boxing, but from what I've seen, Canelo is more often than not usually overrated when it comes to his fights. So he's 63-3 now with 2 draws. And as for Terrence Crawford, he'll improve to 42-0. But did just want to mention that really quickly. You know, some people might have found it entertaining. I didn't. There's maybe like a couple moments where Terrence Crawford had a big land or something, but that was it. No knockdowns, no 10-8s. There wasn't really any big sequences. They started to pick it up in kind of that 10-11-12 range, but they just never really showed it. Honestly, Canelo looked like he'd even want to be there. And at the end of the day, I look at two guys that probably made $50 million, $100 million each just to box, and everyone else is just watching kind of like, yeah, they're the ultimate winners at the end of the day. So good stuff to Terrence Crawford. He got it done, and he was super humble, thank God, on the mic. So what can I say? Absolutely love you, Terrence Crawford. Glad I picked you to win. But let's discuss our four new UFC fights that have been announced since we last talked about UFC Fight Night matchups, or just pay-per-view matchups, whatever you want to call it. New fights have been announced. UFC 322 has a nice little women's prelim as the number 12-ranked women's strawweight Angela Hill is back. That's right, she's back in action to take on Fatima, the Archangel Klein. Fatima is 2-1 in the UFC, wins over Victoria Dukova and Melissa Martinez. Angela Overkill Hill, 18-5 professionally, 13-15 in the UFC. Yikes. Yikes is all I'm going to say for you, Angela. You are -2 in terms of your UFC wins to losses. So, yeah, Angela recently lost to Yasmin Lucindo, which isn't that bad of a loss. But she'll be back looking to get another win against Fatima Klein, who they're trying to break into the rankings. And let me just tell you right now, Angela Kill is 15 years older than her, and I can already see her holding her gatekeeping spot. She's one of the best gatekeepers on the roster. This is a decent matchup for that UFC 322 Madison Square Garden card, and hey, you know, we always love seeing ranked fighters on these matchups. So, Angela Hill, Fatima Klein, keep your eyes peeled for that one. Now, this one, UFC 323. That's right, UFC 323 has its first fight announced December 6th at the T-Mobile Arena. The number 5-ranked women's flyweight is getting another run this year as Macy Barber comes to take on the number 9-ranked killer Kareen Silva. And Kareen Silva picked up a bounce-back win against Leonie Barbosa. Was it impressive? No. We don't need to act like it wasn't impressive, but she did get back in the win column, and now she's getting a top five opponent in Macy Barber. Now, Macy Barber was scheduled to take on Erin Blanchfield in a main event earlier this year, and literally right before walkouts was, like, medically uncleared or, like, couldn't go out or something. It was ridiculous, but Macy's on, like, a five-fight winning streak, got a couple TKOs on that run. You know, I really hope she fights, and if she does fight, I got her beating Kareen Silva. But we'll have to see what takes place here. You know, the UFC 323 should be pretty interesting. That matchup will be going down in like 3 months or just under. We'll have to see. Yeah, good matchup there in the women's division. UFC 321, October 25th in Abu Dhabi, is getting another new matchup. This one in the featherweight division as the 10-1, 2-0 in the UFC, Jose Delgado, coming off of his round one 26-second knockout of Haider Emile, is taking on the prospect, Nathaniel Wood. Now, Nathaniel Wood isn't really the prospect anymore. This dude is 32, so I don't really want to say he's a prospect, but hey, just picked up a big win over Morgan Cherie. He's been a Cage Warriors champion. This dude has been in Fight of the Nights. He is finally finding his footing at featherweight, and I'm so excited to see him here. Now, this is a tough matchup for both guys. This should be a very competitive fight. I mean, this is going to be one of those prelim bangers they talk about in terms of a UFC 321 pay-per-view. I'm probably leaning with Nathaniel Wood, but I'm not sleeping on Jose Delgado at all, especially after what he did to Haider Emile. So, Nathaniel Wood, Jose Delgado, whoever wins this is getting a ranked opponent next. I can pretty much bank on that. So, yeah, keep your eyes peeled for that at the end of October. And then, our final fight announcement that we have. It's not the main event for UFC Qatar, but it's going to be a banger on the main card. Heavyweight division, the number 7th ranked Sergey the Polar Bear Spivak takes on the number 12 ranked Shamil Gaziev. That's right, everyone's favorite fighter, Shamil Gaziev. He's just a meme fighter, and I have no idea why. No idea why Shamil Gaziev is a meme fighter. I think it's because he was poised to come in and be like the next big thing and then just got his face bashed in by Jerzy Rozenstruik. But he's coming off a round one knockout of Thomas Peterson. Also holds a win over Martin Boudet in the UFC. 3-1 in the UFC, 14-1 professionally. Hails from Baran, you know, trained in Russia, but now hails out of Baran. And he's taking on Sergey Spivak, who is 8-6 in the UFC, 17-6 professionally. Holds wins over Tai Tuivasa, Derek Lewis, Marcin Tybura. We know a lot about Sergey Spivak. He recently lost to Halt Almeida, which isn't a bad loss at all. But, you know, Sergey Spivak has a pretty straightforward game plan, take you down and submit you. As for Shamil Gaziev, he wants to keep it on the feet and knock you out or TKO you. So this should be a fun one in Qatar. I am pumped for whatever this takes place. So keep your eyes peeled for when the UFC Qatar goes down, because it's going to be a masterclass of a card. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, I say we look at Dana White's Contender Series, because 9.6, that's right, Season 9, Episode 6, is right upon us, and I did take notes. I literally took notes right before this on the fighters and what we can expect, and I have 5 new predictions to give you guys for this upcoming card. I mean, it's been a great season. I'm excited to see these matchups continuing. We have 2 bantamweights on this card, matchups, we have a bantamweight to open the show and a bantamweight matchup to close the show. Also have a middleweight matchup, lightweight matchup, and my favorite light heavyweight matchup. So, without further ado, let's dive into it. First off, bantamweight kicking off the card, Rafael Uchegbu takes on Cody, the best fisherman in MMA, Chavanechik. Wow. The best fisherman in MMA is his nickname? I don't really know if that's a nickname per se, but hey, what can I say? Interestingly enough, Rafael coming in is the minus 155 favorite. Cody plus 125 is the underdog. Rafael at 10-1 is 27 years old from England. Of his 10 wins, he has 9 wins by finish, 4 KOs and 5 subs. He's gone 2-0 in Bellator. You know, those fights are back in 2019, and he did have one fight in the PFL. That was in 2022. He currently rides a 4-fight winning streak, and he was originally supposed to fight Lewis Lee Scott back in December of 2023. That's just a fun fight that could have happened. Lewis Lee Scott, of course, fought on, I think it was episode 2? I've been 3 of this season, and he put on a great performance to get a contract. But so it's weird to think that those two could have crossed a path. His last win was in May of 2024, so it has been a while since he's fought, in over a year, almost a year and a half for Rafael Uchegbu. But hey, trains out of England. He's had some tough fights here and there. This should be a good one as he takes on the best fisherman in MMA, Cody Chavanechik. I don't know how to say his name, actually. It's Chovanchik. I think it's Chovanchik. Chovanchik. I think it's Chovanchik is how you say his last name. But he's also 27. He's from Ontario. He trains at Niagara Top Team, same as top 10 women's flyweight Jasmine Jastavicious, and the prospect in the welterweight division, Mike Mallett, who's actually taking on Kevin Holland coming up here. Cody has 3 KOs and 2 subs out of his 8 wins, and he also has 0 losses, funny enough. His last win was May 30th, so as opposed to May of 2024, Cody's last win was in May of this year. He won the Unified MMA Championship in the Unified MMA Fight League, and funny enough is that he's never fought an opponent with a losing record, which is something I really needed to start looking at when I look at who these guys are, because a lot of the fighters that you see on this Dana White's Contender Series show come in with really good records that have just not been fighting good people. So Cody, I looked at his record, the toughest guy he fought, or the least tough guy he fought, was 4-4. So he fought a guy who was, even other than that, everyone else he has fought and has had a positive win-loss ratio. And he actually recently beat someone who was 12-5. So super impressive stuff. I'm going to go with Cody Chavanechik. I was going to call him Corey for some reason. But Cody Chavanechik, like, he's an underdog, trains at a top gym, and he's fought in some tough competition. He stayed more active. He recently won a belt a couple months ago. So yeah, I'm going to ride with Cody here. And as for Rafael Uchegbu, he could have a good performance here, but I don't know. There's just something about when I see fighters train at good gyms, when I see them coming in having fought in tough competition, this is where he can get it done. But hey, 9 of 10 wins are by finish for Rafael, and 5 of 8 are by finish for Cody Chavanechik. I think we are going to see a finish in this contest. Next up, we head to the men's lightweight division. We'll go middleweight division. I think this is the bout order. Middleweight division, as In-Soo Legendary Huang takes on Paddy McCrory. This matchup, I am so torn on. Super torn on this one. In-Soo Huang is the underdog at plus 150. Paddy is the favorite at minus 180. In-Soo Huang comes in at 8-1. Paddy comes in at 6-1. Both men naturally fight at middleweight, and an orthodox stance for In-Soo Huang and a switch stance for Paddy are like one of the only real differences height-wise. Got a bit of height and reach for In-Soo Huang, but nothing too crazy. I mean, 6'3 to 6'. I don't know if that's super crazy enough for you. In-Soo Huang, 31 years old, is from South Korea, and he's on a 4-fight winning streak. Of his 8 wins, 6 are by KO, all 6 coming in round number 1. He was actually supposed to fight Will Curry on this card, but Will unfortunately pulled out, so in steps Paddy McCrory. His last win came in March, and you know, this guy, he's fought a lot of tough people. Won a belt in, it's like Road FC or something, whatever promotion he was in. But I will say, his one loss, this is crazy, so all of his knockout wins have come in round one. His one career loss, he was knocked out in 5 seconds. He was knocked out in 5 freaking seconds. Can you believe that? I mean, I know that was a while ago. He's gone on a win streak since, but 5 seconds? That's like you absorb one punch and it's over. And the ref jumps in it, like, right when the punch lands. So Tough stuff for Unsung Liu, having suffered that defeat, but he's bounced back. He's gotten some knockout wins. He's looking to bring it to Patty McCrory. The favorite here, Patty, is 27 years old. 27 seems to be the magic number on this card. He's from Ireland and currently rides a 2-fight winning streak. He fights out of Fight Academy Ireland with UFC fighter Rhys McKee, who's probably going to get cut, and legendary Bellator PFL fighter Paul Hughes, who's actually fighting the undefeated Usman Nurmagomedov for his belt in a rematch. So he's a very tough competitor and very good to see training at a gym with. Patty McCrory has 5 of his 6 wins by finish, 3 KOs, and 2 subs, and he's gone 4-1 in Cage Warriors. He's one of these Cage Warriors guys. He's been very impressive there, and, you know, 4-1 is decent. He fought on Season 32 of The Ultimate Fighter, going 1-1, getting a round 1 finish in the first fight, and then in the semifinals, losing to Robert Valentine, getting finished in round number 1. So Patty, been on The Ultimate Fighter before, trains at a good gym. As for Intu Hwang, he has the knockout power. I also really love South Korean fighters, and when you see these two, actually get a visual of them. Hyung Soo-woo is covered from neck to, like, knees in tattoos. Like, he is just drenched in tattoos, so he has the look. But, you know, I can definitely see Hyun Soo Hwang coming out, getting a nasty knockout, but there's just something about Patty training at Fight Academy Ireland, you know, having been on The Ultimate Fighter and actually gotten a win, training, you know, in Ireland, a lot of tough people out there. I'm going to go with Patty McCrory here. I am. I'm going to ride with Patty. I'm going to see if another Patty the Batty can break in. We already have Pimblett. Maybe McCrory will be next. But this one I'm very torn on. Probably the most torn on, I'll say. So I will not be too surprised if Intu Hwang wins. But, you know, I'm going to ride with Patty McCrory. Next up, now we're in the lightweight division. And for this matchup, we have Tommy Gant. Tommy Gant taking on Adam Bomb Livingston. Tommy Gant coming in as the minus 160 favorite at plus 130. Adam is the underdog. Tommy Gant, 32 years old from North Carolina, is 10-0. With 1 no contest, and of his 10 wins, 9 are by finish, which is very impressive. As for Adam Livingston, he's 24 years old, coming from New York, and of his 6 victories, he has gotten a whopping 4 KOs and 1 sub, so 5 of 6, not too bad. For Tommy Gant, his last fight was in February. He has 5 of his 9 wins coming in round number 1, and, you know, this guy debuted in 2024. You know, he has a wrestler's background. He debuted in 2024, went 8-0. This guy went 8-0 last year. I don't think anyone understands how insane that is. And that's like the best UFC fighters will get 2 to 3 fights. Kevin Holland, who is the most active fighter on the entire roster, averages at maximum 4, trying to get the rare 5 this year. So, look, Tommy Gant, insane. Insane consistency, but I do want to say, you know, he did go 8-0 from April to November. He's already had 2 fights this year, both getting them done. He has not fought in good people. All right, his opponent records, by the way, this is going from his most recent to least recent. 5-8, 2-0, 11-7, 18-23, 7-10, 2-4, my favorite, 10-40. He beat a guy who was 10-40. Yeah, you and 39 other people have beaten this guy, and 2-0, and this was way back in the early stages. So he has not been fighting anyone close to UFC caliber people. Now, I'm not saying Adam Livingston is UFC caliber, but I am saying is that Tommy Gant could be in for a rude awakening in this contest. But hey, 9 of his 10 wins are by finish. He has looked pretty good, and plus he's 32, has that age advantage over the 24-year-old Adam Livingston. He's from New York, of course. Long Island MMA is where he trains, same gym as UFC veteran Brian Kelleher, UFC veteran Gregor Gilseppe, and PFL legend, I think it's Chris Wade, I think it is, last name's Wade. He fought in the lightweight division. I recognize the name. As for Adam, 5 of his 6 wins are by finish. He went 2-0 in LFA. Those have been his last 2 fights. His last win was June 20th. He got a round 2 doctor stoppage TKO. This one's tricky for me, because Adam Livingston definitely seems like he is a legit all-around fighter. He has fought in very tough competition, but Tommy Gant's strength of schedule may be favorable to him. I mean, dude, he debuted less than 2 years ago, so he is averaging almost a fight every month and a half, every 2 months, I think it is. If he debuted in April of 2024, and it is now, so April of 2024 to April of this year, that was 4, we're now in month number 9, 15 months, he's gotten 10 wins. Wow, that's insane. In 15 months, he has gotten 10 wins. Now, mind you, there was a streak like last summer where he fought 4 times in under a month. So it's absolutely insane. It kind of makes me want to root for him. Adam does train at a decent gym, but he's a bit younger. You know, I do think maybe the grappling could prove as a liability for him. So we're going to go with Tommy Gant to get this done. I am mixing it up with some underdog picks and some favorite picks. So I am going to go with the favorite here in Thomas Gant. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we go to the co-main event, if you will. The second to last matchup, more so as I'll call it, light heavyweight division. Light heavyweights seem to always, you know, what's the opposite at this point? They seem to always succeed on here. They always deliver, I think is what I was looking for. They always deliver in their matchups. And for this one, we have Muhammad Ali taking on Iwo Rudy Baranowski. Quite the nickname. Rudy is the nickname for Iwo Baranowski. Very funny. Iwo Baranowski plus 185 is the underdog. Muhammad Ali is minus 225 as the biggest favorite on the card. Iwo, 26 years old, from Poland, last picked up a win in March. He is 5-0 with all of his wins coming in round one, 3 KOs and 2 subs. His longest fight was just under 4 minutes at 3 minutes and 54 seconds. Iwo is 17-3 in his amateur career, where he ended on a 10-fight winning streak. So the 5-0 record doesn't really show just how much this dude has fought in his career. We just saw a Polish fighter in Cesar Olkajasek get it done. Will Iwo be the next guy? I don't know. He might, but, you know, I was kind of curious. I'm like, why is this guy 5-0 getting a shot on here? And then I look, yeah, he's had 20 amateur fights, and after starting 7-3, ended winning all 10 of them. So, Iwo, coming in over from Poland, looking to bring it as he takes on the biggest favorite, Muhammad Ali. Muhammad, 31 years old, is 5 years older than Iwo, is born in Brazil, but now fights out of Virginia. He trains at Team Floyd Irving MMA, the same gym as former ranked featherweight Sodiq Yusuf, and former, I don't know if he was in main events, but he has provided the best knockout clips you've ever seen, James Vick. Of his 4 wins, he has 3 KOs, and his last win in March was against Jared Gooden. The Night Train, that's right, the Night Train. We all remember Jared Gooden, you know, he used to fight in the Apex 2020 and 2022. You know, decent name to have on your record. Muhammad Ali has a 14-14 record in grappling. That is right, he is my .500 in grappling, 14-14. That is not 14-14. 4-14, I will say. He has had 14 wins, 14 losses. But yeah, I'm a little perplexed as why he's such a big favorite. It must be his grappling. Maybe there's something else I don't know about him. Like, sometimes I don't know. Like, if you didn't know about Gable Stevenson, who picked up a win this past Friday, you would just be like, oh, who's this guy debuting who only has one, who's 0-0, and John Jones is in his corner. You know, maybe it's one of those instances. Which, by the way, Gable Stevenson, get him on the Contender Series in a fight or two. I would love to see him. They gave Bo Nickel a shot after one. They should maybe just put Gable on here against a really crappy heavyweight. We'll have to see, though. But Muhammad Ali, I like Iwo a bit more. I especially like that he has had much more MMA fights as opposed to Muhammad Ali's more of a grappling background. The win over Jared Gooden was good, but it was a decision. You know, and as for Iwo, he's been finishing guys left, right, and center. So I am going to ride with the man from Poland, but maybe I'll eat it. Maybe I'll have to eat it based on the fact that Muhammad is a minus 225 favorite. But Iwo at plus 185, I think, will be a good underdog bet for any of you gamblers out there. Maybe I should get into gambling with all the picks I make. You know, I feel like I'd have some success, one would say. But with that, let's get into our featured bout of the evening. It's the bantamweight, which you'll love to see. Maxim Lee takes on Hector Guanche Warrior. It's actually Hecher, H-E-C-H-E-R. So I don't know if it's pronounced Hecher Sosa or Hecker Sosa. I'm going to say it's Hecher. Hecher Sosa sounds about right. Hecher's coming in plus 150 as the underdog. Maxim Lee at minus 180 is the favorite. We'll start with Hecher Sosa, 30 years old, fighting out of Spain. He is 13-1, the best record on the entire card, in my opinion. And he currently rides a 10-fight winning streak. Of his 13 wins, 9 are by finish, 6 KOs, and 3 subs. His one sub loss was over freaking like 3 years ago. Been a while. His last win was in June, and I looked at all of his opponents' records, and they've all been pretty good. He's been fighting some tough guys, left, right, and center, so I do not doubt that he's going to deliver when he steps into the octagon. But he is taking on a man who is the favorite, the 9-0, the man from Brazil, the 26-year-old Maxim Lee. 8 of his 9 wins are by finish, 4 KOs, and 4 subs, and he's gone 2-0. And LFA, those were his last 2 wins. His last win was in February. So Maxim Lee coming in with a little win streak to his name. Oh yeah, 9-0. He's come all of his wins he has won. I just love these 13-1 guys. I really do. Now Maxim Lee could go out there and starch Hector Sosa, but I just love 13-1 coming out of Spain. I just watched Larian Douglas do it, you know, a week ago. I think it was last week. Yeah, wow, I think it was last week where he starched a guy. He is coming in with a 12-5 record. So these guys that come in with a lot of fights, especially looking at the fact that he has fought in decent opponents, really makes me like Hector Sosa here. And as for Maxim Lee, you know, I'm not going to discredit him. You know, 9-0, 8 finishes is very impressive, but I don't really know too much. Anything else about him. So I'm going to go with Hector Sosa to get this done. When I look at all these fights, Hector Sosa, Maxim Lee, I could see a decision here. I could really see a fight of the night decision here. For Iwo and Muhammad, I'm betting a finish. Tommy Gant and Adam Livingston, I'm betting a finish. Isu Huang and Penny McCrory, I'm betting a finish. And for Cody Karanchak and Rafael Uchengbo, I'm going to go with a finish. So I'm going to say 4 finishes, main event goes the distance. But season 9 has been perfect. You know, it literally only had the dud in week 1, which was reminiscent of season 7. And here we are. We've already bounced back. We're already delivering with better fights. So I'm excited to see what else happens for the rest of the season. But yeah, that's all we got for Damas Quintero Series Episode 9, Season 6. Season 9, Episode 6. Oh my gosh, I've always been saying it wrong. I'm going to just go 9.6. Damas Quintero Series 9.6. Those our predictions. And with that, let's get into a little recap of the NFL. Any of my fantasy football fans, you'll like me talking about things, but there are still 2 games tonight, which we'll mention a tinge. But yeah, let's do a little recap, see where everyone's at. And as a Vikings fan, yes, I am very sad. Alrighty, week 2 of the NFL season kicked off on Thursday, and we had the Packers taking on the Commanders. And unfortunately, you know, I did predict the Packers to win, but they won. You know, I don't like picking them to win, but I am accepting of the fact that the Packers do win games. As a Vikings fan, I am always sad to see the Packers picking up wins. But nonetheless, Packers win 27-18. They will move to 2-0, and I believe they lead the NFC North to my tragic dismay. As for the Commanders, they will fall to 1-1. But I mean, not too bad. Still second in the NFC East, and the season's early, so you can't say too much. But Tucker Kraft, the best fantasy player of this game, 24.4 points for the Packers tight end. He had 6 catches for 124 yards and a touchdown. Impressive stuff from him. For the Commanders, Jaden Daniels led the day with 19.7. He had 200 yards passing, 2 touchdowns, and rushed for 17 yards. Overall, Zach Ertz had 18.4. Debo had 17.4 for the Commanders. Jordan Love had 20.88, and Josh Jacobs was the third best for the Packers with 14.4. Other than that, I mean, when I look around, Terry McLaurin, 5 catches, 48 yards, didn't do too bad. And, you know, Dontavian Wicks, 4 catches, 44 yards, ain't too bad himself. I will say the Commanders definitely didn't really start out, you know, like last year. I mean, it took a while for Jaden Daniels to really break into himself, and especially being sophomore year, expectations are higher. As for the Packers, I mean, their defense looks good. Their offense looks good. I'm really hoping they aren't as good as people say they're going to be. So, Packers kicked us off with a win. Good for them. Star of the game was Tucker Kraft. Then we got into some action on Sunday at noon. Rams and Titans, and to no one's surprise, the Rams beat the Titans 33-19. But Titans held them in there. Titans held in there for a while. They weren't going away easily, but the Rams will go to 2-0, and everyone but the Seahawks now in the NFC West are 2-0. So good stuff all around. Rams are somehow in third. I think they should be in first for the NFC West if they've allowed the least amount of points. But hey, what do I know? I'm no actual grader of the NFL's freaking ranking standing system. For the Titans, they are one of the few teams that are 0-2, and they already have a minus 22 point differential. Yeah. Rough showing from the Titans here. Cam Ward did better, though. He got 9.8 fantasy points for this game. Also, for the Titans, you add wide receiver Iomanor. No idea who he is. 4 catches, 56 yards. Caught the lone touchdown. Tony Pollard on 20 rushes at 92 yards. But it was all Joey Sly again. 17 points from the kicker. He's easily the best part of this Tennessee Titans roster. As for the Rams, Puka Nacua, 27.6 points. Devontae Adams, 22.8. And Matt Stafford, 17.32. They are honestly disgusting. that is just such a dirty, dirty lineup right there. Kyren Williams had 66 yards, but it was Puka Nacua and Blake Corum both rushing in touchdowns. Despite throwing one pick, just under 300 yards and two touchdowns from Matt Stafford led him to a good day. Puka, 8 catches, 91 yards. Devontae, 6 catches, 106 yards, and a touchdown. And the tight end, Allen, even caught a touchdown on his lone catch of the game. Rams offense is looking good, but giving up a lot of points to the kicker, Joey Sly. Shame, shame, shame. Next up, Jaguars and Bengals, and to some miracle, somehow, I have no idea, but the Bengals escaped with a win here and are 2-0 to start the year. They have a plus 5-point differential on the year, but I cannot believe they're 2-0. They're the top team in the AFC North. As for the Jags, 1-1, unfortunate loss here for the Jaguars. I can't even lie. I mean, I have no idea how they did it, but a Jake Browning 1-yard rush with 18 seconds left sealed the deal, as I was going to say. But early on, Joe Shiesty went down, and Joe Burrow is now out 3 months. Yeah, that'll hurt. Joe Burrow is quietly and quickly, unfortunately, having an unfortunate career as he's getting injured left, right, and center, and I think this might be the last straw in the coffin for him. I also found out that Tank Bigsby was traded from the Jaguars to the Eagles, so Tank Bigsby enjoyers like myself have to eat it, as Travis Etienne had 16.9 fantasy points in this game. Wide receiver Brown had 17.6, and Trevor Lawrence had 19.24 in the loss. Ja'Marr Chase might be the best wide receiver in the league, as he scored 36.5 fantasy points. T. Higgins, 14.6, and Jake Browning, 17.74. Trevor Lawrence, 3 touchdowns, 2 picks. Looked pretty average. Etienne, 71 rushing yards. The rookie tight end, the rookie RB, I should say, Tutin, had 42 yards rushing. Brian Thomas Jr., 4 catches, 49 yards. Travis Hunter had 3 catches for 22 yards. Not much was done from either of these boys. For Cincy, Joe Shiesty, 76 yards and a tutty was all he had to show. And even Chase Brown, the running back, 47 yards, wasn't getting it done. But it was the 14 catches, 165-yard, 1-touchdown game from Ja'Marr Chase. That was utterly insane. T. Higgins also had 3 catches for 56 yards and a touchdown. Even the wide receiver Tinsley had 1 13-yard catch for a touchdown. How about that? Good stuff for the Bengals. Following that, we witnessed the biggest favorite of the weekend, the -900 Ravens, just dominating the Browns. I mean, this was a pitiful, pitiful performance from the Cleveland Browns, and to be honest, I wasn't surprised at all. Lamar, 26 fantasy points. For the Browns, you know, the rookie, Dylan Sampson, 10 points. You know, he led the day. Jerome Ford had 10. Cedric Tillman had 10. That's about it for your Browns. For the Ravens, wide receiver Walker had 16.6, and the defense had 15 points on their own. Impressive stuff. Impressive stuff all around from Lamar Jackson here in the Ravens now. You know, I worried they might start out 0-2, but they're 1-1. They have a dominant points for and points against, and I have a feeling the Ravens are going to dominate the AFC North yet again. As for the Browns, 0-2 with a -25-point differential. Yikers. That's all I'm going to say there. Lamar, 225 yards passing for 4 touchdowns. As for Derrick Henry, 11 rushes, only 23 yards. Rough. Zay Flowers, 7 catches, 75 yards. DeAndre Hopkins, 2 catches, 64 yards and a touchdown. And that was really about it for the Ravens. Dominant stuff there. For the Browns, you know, Joe Flacco, 199 yards, touchdown and a pick. Dillian Gabriel came in garbage time, 3 for 3, 19 yards and a touchdown. I think they should give Dillian Gabriel a shot. I mean, come on, this dude was a killer at Oregon. Let's put him in. Rookie Quashawn Judkins came in, 10 rushes, 61 yards, outrushed Ford and Sampson, but it was Sampson's catching game, 3 catches, 13 yards, that got him a touchdown. Jerry Jeudy, 4 catches, 51 yards, was a stud, and the tight end Fannin Jr. getting it done, 4 catches for 48 yards. Yeah. Good stuff for the Ravens here. I'm excited to see how they progress as the season moves along. Then Bills and Jets domination from the Bills, 30-10. And to make matters worse, Justin Fields went down. Yikes, another injury for Justin Fields. This dude, this poor man, just can't escape it. Jets will fall to 0-2 and somehow are at a -22-point differential. Bills, 2-0, 71 points for, 50 points against. Yeah, Bills are coming for it all this season. What's his face? Josh Allen taking a game off. This was the James Cook show. 26.5 fantasy points for James Cook. Their defense dropped 12. Their kicker, Matt Prater, had 14. They ran all over this Jets offense. Garrett Wilson, 9 fantasy points, was the most for the Jets. And they were able to get a garbage time touchdown from Tyrod Taylor with 5 minutes left in the game. Scratch that, 3.5 minutes left in the game. For Buffalo, Josh Allen goes for 148 yards passing, but it's Mitchell Trubisky who comes in and ends the game. James Cook, 132 yards rushing for 2 touchdowns. Dude was a killer, absolute killer. Josh Palmer, 2 catches, 47 yards, led the wide receiver core. For the Jets, Fields, 3 for 11, 27 yards, and rushed 5 times for 49 yards before he got injured. Breece Hall had 10 rushes for 29 yards. It was Garrett Wilson with 4 catches, 50 yards. That did everything at the end of the day. And it was the tight end Ruckert who caught the lone touchdown for the Jets. Jets are definitely going to need to figure out what's going on, because a rough start to the season after what was such a beautiful game against the Steelers. Keeping our noon games rolling, this was the only game I predicted wrong out of the entire day besides Sunday Night Football and Thursday Night Football. So I have only gotten 2 predictions wrong this week, which is very impressive. One of which was this game, as the Patriots beat the Dolphins 33-27. 26 fantasy points from Drake May, 21 from Ramondre, 12 from the defense. The Patriots looked great here. Devin Achane, 26 fantasy points as well. Tua Tagovailoa had 18, and Jaylen Waddle, 17.8. All was going well for the Dolphins. They had themselves a 10-point lead. And then out of nowhere, Antonio Gibson returned a 90-yard kickoff, and Andy Baragalis, the rookie kicker, knocked in a 53-yarder to put them ahead. Yeah, good stuff from the Dolphins up until they fell apart. Drake May, impressive stuff leading a comeback. 19 for 23, 203 yards and 2 tutties. Love to see it. Rookie Henderson, Trayvon Henderson, 3 rushes, 10 yards. Was not the main backfield man. It was Ramondre, 11 rushes for 54. And at the end of the day, Drake May outran both of them, 10 rushes, 38 yards, and got the tutty. Ramondre also had 5 catches for 88 yards. Crazy. Stephon Diggs, 4 catches, 32 yards. You know, a lot of people caught passes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 different Patriots caught a pass. But I'm really happy to see Antonio Gibson having success in the return game. He was also able to catch a pass. He was able to get 5 rushes in. This guy was such a killer with the Redskins, so Commanders, if you will. And I'm just happy to see him getting some touches here in New England. For the Dolphins, yeah, Tua might actually have CTE. I was watching him in this press conference post-interview, and he was just talking some nonsense. 315 yards and 2 touchdowns is good, but that one pick, that'll hurt. Achane had 11 rushes for 30 yards, but it was his 8 catches, 92 yards, and a touchdown, which really did it for him. Tyreek, 6 catches, 109 yards, was looking good. And Jaylen Waddle, 5 catches, 68 yards, and a touchdown, was doing good as well. Unfortunately, Dolphins are not going to like this, as they are going to start their season out 0-2 with a minus 31 point differential. Dolphins, what are you doing? Now, as for the Patriots, good win here. They're 1-1, despite having a not minus 1 point differential. Season's still early. This is only week 2. Season is much, much early. Then, I believe, we had a lot more noon games this year. Today, I should say. 49ers and Saints. Somehow, the Saints kept this close. I have no idea. But 49ers squeak away with a 26-21 win. That's all I would say. You know, they snuck away with this victory here. 49ers are 2-0, of course. And as for the Saints, they are 0-2, but a good 0-2. They have not played bad through their first 2 games. Christian McCaffrey, 22 fantasy points. Mac Jones, that's right, Mac Jones, 21. And Juwan Jennings, 19.9. Spencer Rattler, 21 fantasy points for the kid. Alvin Kamara at 18. And Juwan Johnson had 15.9, the tight end for the Saints. And it was actually a touchdown from the Saints, which brought it to a 26-21 score, but the defense for the 49ers was able to clutch up. Brock Purdy not starting this week, and instead Mac Jones comes in, 279 yards and 3 touchdowns. He even ran the ball 6 times and got 6 yards. McCaffrey ran for 55. Brown Robinson Jr. ran for 20. How about that? Juwan Jennings, 5 catches, 89 yards and a tutty. Christian McCaffrey, 6 catches, 50 yards and a tutty. Ricky Purcell, 4 catches, 58 yards. A lot of people catch a lot of passes here on the 49ers team. Spencer Rattler, 207 yards, threw 3 touchdowns himself. He looked pretty good out there. Kamara ran for 99 yards, also had 6 catches for 21 yards, but it's Juwan Johnson and Rashid Shaheed who both caught touchdowns. Olave had the most yards with 54. I think the Saints are much better than they I was expecting them to be. But I will say their one issue is they haven't won. So get the wins going, then you'll, you know, be able to find some success. One of the best games of the week was Cowboys and Giants. It actually might be my favorite game of the week so far. A little throwdown in the NFC South, or NFC East, my bad. And Cowboys escape with the win. They'll improve to 1-1. The Giants will fall to 0-2 to start the year. But Malik Nabers, 37.7 fantasy points, stole the day. Holy cow. Russ, 30 fantasy points. Wandale Robinson, 28 fantasy points. Insane. Javonte Williams, 25 fantasy points for the Cowboys. Brandon Aubrey, the kicker, who I have in 5 of my 6 leagues, 23 fantasy points. And Dak, it goes for 22. And you know what? It was a 64-yarder from Brandon Aubrey to tie the game as time expired. And then he hits a 46-yarder as time expires in overtime to win that game. But yeah, just deep ball after deep ball. I mean, listen to these touchdowns. 29-yarder from Russ to Malik Nabers. A 32-yarder for Wandale Robinson, and a 48-yarder to Malik Nabers. The Giants were cooking. Russell Wilson, career high in yards on the Giants in the latter stages of his career. 450 yards, 3 tutties, and a pick. Scatabo leads the backfield, 45 yards at a tutty. How about that for the kid? Malik Nabers, and 9 rushes, 167 yards, 2 tutties. Vondale, 8 catches, 114 yards, and a touchdown. Wild performance, both these boys. Even Darius Slayton, 2 catches, 61 yards, was doing pretty good himself. Happy to see the Arizona State rookie, Scatabo, getting himself a touchdown here in his second game. Good for him. But Giants are 0-2, but played the Cowboys really freaking close. Dak, great bounce back game here from that Eagles loss. 361 yards, 2 tutties, and a pick. Javonte, 97 yards and a touchdown. Miles Sanders, 50 yards rushing. They got him a touchdown. CeeDee Lamb, 9 catches for 112 yards. Jake Ferguson, 9 catches, 78 yards. They were feeding that boy. George Pickens, 5 catches, 68 yards, gets a touchdown. And Turpin, on 4 catches, had a touchdown himself. Good stuff for the Cowboys and the Giants. It was an offensive explosion. As for the defenses, very, very bad. But the worst defense of the week actually goes to the Chicago Bears, who put up an outstanding minus 11 in fantasy football as the Lions dismantle them 52-21, the biggest win of the year already. And of course, it's from the frickin' Lions. Lions are 1-1 to start the year, and I believe have the most points out of any team with 65. Oh, the Bills actually have more. Bills have 71. Ravens have 81. Wow, so actually third most will be going to the Lions with 65 points on the year. Bears will fall to 0-2 and have given up an outstanding 79 points to their first two games. As for fantasy-wise, Romo Dunze had 31.8 fantasy points, Caleb Williams 16, DeAndre Swift 13, Amon-Ra 39 fantasy points, Jared Goff 33, and Jahmyr Gibbs had 19. This was just domination. And by the way, this was such domination, is that with 8 minutes left in the game, Amon-Ra was catching passes from Jared Goff. I mean, this was wild. Caleb Williams, 207 yards, 2 touchdowns and a pick. They brought Bagent in at the end. He threw 3 passes. Swift was able to run in a touchdown. And Odunze had 2 touchdowns on 7 catches for 120 yards. He was a stud. DJ Moore, 5 catches, 46 yards. Caleb passed to DJ. Justin Fields loved DJ. Why don't you love DJ Moore as much as I do? For Jared Goff, 334 yards, only 5 incompletions, 5 tutties, 3 touchdowns for Amon-Ra on 9 catches for 115 yards. He exploded. Jahmyr, 94 yards rushing. Montgomery, 57 yards rushing. They both have the same amount of rushes and both get a touchdown. Lions, this looked like the Lions we know and love, but it does raise a question, just how good are the Packers? That's all wonder. And as for the Bears, they are bad. The Bears suck. What else is new? This was just a blowout. Then we finally got into our 3:30 game, Seahawks and Steelers. Actually, wait, this was another noon game. There were so many freaking noon games. Seahawks win 31-17. This was my favorite upset pick of the week, and it came to fruition, which I'm always happy to see. Seahawks will improve to 1-1 in a NFC West that's looking pretty freaking good. As for Steelers, they will fall to 1-1 as they are now third in the AFC North. Kenneth Walker, 18 fantasy points. Jackson Smith and Jigba, 18. Cooper Kupp had 16. Jalen Warren, 17 fantasy points, leads the Steelers as Chris Boswell gets 17. DK Metcalf gets 11. Rough showing from Pittsburgh today. But as for Seattle, they were able to rally, get a win. Sam Darnold, 295 yards. Did throw 2 touchdowns, but also threw 2 picks, which isn't too good. Smith and Jigba, 8 catches, 103 yards. But it's Horton and Barner who both catch touchdowns for the Seahawks. Kenneth Walker, 105 yards and a tutty despite having less carries than Zach Charbonnet. You know, it's a battle for the backfield in Seattle. Aaron Rodgers, 203 yards and a touchdown, throws two picks. Not very good. Jalen Warren had the most yards and receptions, oddly enough. And he also had the most carries. So Steelers are going to need to assess what's wrong. Is the Seahawks dismantled you? You know, that's what they expect, though. With Sam Darnold, how much they paid him, they're hoping Sam Darnold can torch some defenses out there. But yeah, good win for the Steelers, 31-17. I predicted it, so I was happy. Getting into the 3:30 slate, I can't believe I nailed this one. I thought this one was surely going to be wrong, especially the whole game. And then the Colts do it again, 2-0, unreal. They pull out a win over the Broncos, who will fall to 1-1, 29-28. Franklin, wide receiver for the Broncos, 24 fantasy points. Bo Nix had 20, and J.K. Dobbins had 15. For the Colts, 25 fantasy points for Jonathan Taylor. Actually, I think it was 29, if I'm trying to read the small writing. I see 29 for JT. For DJ, Daniel Jones, 22. And as for Schrader, the wide receiver, 18. I believe he's a wide receiver. Is he, what is Schrader? What even is a Schrader? I don't even know who the heck that is. Spencer Schrader is the kicker. The kicker had 18 points. Wow. Wow. Good job to the Colts kicker. My goodness. That boy exploded. He hit 5 field goals in this game. That's very impressive. Troy Franklin. That's who was killing it for Denver. Bo Nix, 206 yards, 3 touchdowns and a pick. Gets it done. J.K. Dobbins had 76 yards and a tutty. And yeah, other than that, Cortland Sutton had one catch, which is good for me because I was playing him, but I also have him in the league, so that sucks. Daniel Jones, I mean, what a start for the kid. 360 yards and a touchdown. Jonathan Taylor runs for 165 yards. Daniel Jones ran in a touchdown. And the rookie tight end, Warren, 4 catches, 79 yards, was looking pretty good as well. And Jonathan Taylor, I'm pretty sure had like a 50-yard run, too, after catching the ball. It was nuts. Good stuff for the Colts. They'll start out 2-0. I was not expecting that. I was not expecting the Colts to be this good. I also think Anthony Richardson was not expecting him to lose his starting position to Daniel Jones, of all people. That's hilarious. Keeping the 3:30 slate going, Cardinals sneak out a win over the Panthers after they almost choked the game. After being up a very impressive 27-9, they give up a touchdown to end the third and 2 in the fourth, but are able to hold on for one final drive to not give up the game. And for Hunter Renfro for the Panthers, 23 fantasy points. Bryce Young at 21, Chubb Hubbard at 18. I didn't even know Renfro was on that team. Kyler Murray, 14. Trey McBride, 13. James Conner, 12. Rough showing from the Cardinals despite winning. Bryce Young, 328 yards and 3 touchdowns and 1 pick. 35 for 55. This boy was letting the ball go. They were throwing this way more than they were running it, as Chubb Hubbard only had 10 rushes for 38 yards. Sanders, the tight end, 7 catches, 54 yards. Renfro had 2 touchdowns. Very impressive. Tatoria McMillan, 6 catches, had a 100-yard game as a rookie. Kyler, 220 yards, touchdown and a pick. James Conner ran one in. Trey McBride, 6 catches, 78 yards. Harrison is held to 2 catches for 27 yards. Marvin Harrison Jr., that is. Yeah, Cardinals are fraudulent, okay? They almost give up a comeback to the Panthers. They barely beat the Saints. Cardinals are the biggest frauds in their division. You watch and learn right here. They're gonna lose some games. As for the Panthers, I think they could sneak out some wins this year. They just gotta start harder. You know, if they started a bit harder, they would get much better. Do much better. I think I meant to say hotter. Harder. Same thing, baby. Last 3:30 game, Eagles and Chiefs. I was very surprised this wasn't Sunday Night Football. It probably should have been Sunday Night Football, being that I was at Sunday Night Football and it sucked. Eagles sneak out a win 20-17. Chiefs start out the year 0-2, and the reigning champs start out 2-0. Good stuff for the Eagles in this one. This was a gritty game. It was a tough game. Saquon, 17 fantasy points. Jake Elliott, 12. Jalen Hurts, 11. Patty the Batty goes for 22.08. Kelsey had 10 fantasy points himself. All came down to the Eagles' defense. At the end of the day, you know, they were up 17. I think they were up actually 20-10, and then the Chiefs were able to get a touchdown, and then the defense just held on to end the game. There's actually some jabbing going on at the end between Chris Jones, defensive endman for the Chiefs, and Jalen Hurts. And Chris Jones was like, I didn't even let you get 100 yards. And Jalen Hurts was like, shut your BA up. We won the game. It doesn't matter. Which I guess he's right. Jalen Hurts, 101 yards passing, and also ran the ball for 15. 15 yards. And he ran in a touchdown, though. So at the end of the day, he did get a touchdown. Saquon, 22 rushes, 88 yards, and a touchdown. Also had two catches. Devontae Smith, 4 catches, 53 yards. A.J. Brown, 5 catches, 27 yards. This was just a defensive battle. At the end of the day, this was a defensive battle, and the Eagles' defense came out on top. For the Chiefs, you know, Patrick Mahomes actually did pretty good, 187 yards and a touchdown, but did throw a pick. It was the 66 yards rushing for a touchdown that really sealed the deal for him. Kelce did well. Thornton caught the lone touchdown for them. And, yeah, other than that, Isaiah Pacheco had a rough game. The Eagles might own the Chiefs now. I think we're in a new era, and I'm just going to hope the Chiefs keep losing. But if the Chiefs don't play, you know, maybe a divisional rival or a really good team, they'll probably blow out teams. So Eagles win 20-17. Good stuff. Good stuff for the Eagles. And then Sunday Night Football, it sucked. I was there. The vibes were not high at the end of the game, but it is what it is. Atlanta defense, 21 points, owned the Minnesota Vikings. This was a actual masterclass from the Falcons, and I got to give it to them. They did really good. I also got to give it to two other people. Bijan Robinson, just under 20 fantasy points, and Parker Romo, the kicker for the Falcons. It was legit. Falcons defense, Bijan Robinson, and Parker Romo. Other than that, I mean, Drake London and Kyle Pitts had like a couple catches. Darnell Mooney had like two catches. It was insane. It was insane. They did give Allgeier a lot more carries at the end, which was a bit perplexing as Bijan was killing us. I mean, 143 yards rushing on 22 rushes. Also had, what was it, 3 catches for 25 yards. He was doing good. But Michael Banks Jr. locked up. Only 135 yards. He was sacked a couple times. Our defense did pretty good. But at the end of the day, when the offense isn't clicking, nothing's going to get done. JJ gets 11 fantasy points. But other than that, we'll record at 8. Jalen Naylor, 6. Not going to cut it. J.J. McCarthy, 158 yards, 2 picks, 3 fumbles, 2 fumbles lost. Really bad game from the rookie. Really bad. 11 for 21. He did not do good. 5 rushes for 25 yards, but 4 turnovers. J.J. McCarthy, what are you doing? What are you doing? 4 turnovers is abysmal. Jordan Mason, 9 rushes, 30 yards. That's nothing to talk about. Justin Jefferson, 3 catches, 81 yards is literally the only high spot. And Adam Thielen almost had a touchdown, but we were stuffed at the goal line. Just awful performance from the Vikings here. I am very disappointed. Very disappointed in the Minnesota Vikings. They will go to 1-1. And as for the Falcons, they will move up to 1-1 as they look to pass the Bucs. I think if the Bucs lose tonight, then, oh no, the Bucs hold a win over the Falcons. So Falcons will be locked in for the number 2 spot in the NFC South to round out the week. But yeah, overall, not too impressive from the Vikings at all. They'll look to bounce back next week, but I don't know if they will. As for tonight's game, you have 2. You have the Chargers and Raiders, and you have the Buccaneers and Texans. And for these games, I will be rooting for a couple players. I will be rooting for Mike Evans and Jacoby Myers. I have both of them, and I will be hoping that they both do very well. I'm also hoping Brock Bowers plays. That would be pretty good. You know, I'll be rooting for Brock Boy. Don't really hope Ladd McConkey or Baker do well, personally, so I won't be rooting for them. I'll be rooting for Genty tonight, Ashton Genty. You know, love him. And if Nico Collins wanted to get like 40 fantasy points, I wouldn't even be mad at that myself. I also have like Buka in a league, but I don't think it's going to matter. But yeah, at the end of the day, I really hope Genty has a breakout performance so then I can trade him to another team in fantasy. Kind of like use him, you know what I'm saying? Like buy ho, sell high. Buy low, sell high. Yeah, that's the terminology I was looking for. But yeah, week 2, pretty exciting. Was it as good as week 1? I'm going to say no. I'm going to say week 1 of the NFL season was better, but it's always tough to top the first week because you just have such a high. But yeah, tough loss for the Vikings, and I was in person. But it is fun to watch a game in a stadium. Plus, the vibes were high because it's Minnesota Vikings fans, and we all love each other. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I say we get into our UFC Noche official recap because a lot went down, and I've been more than excited to talk about it. So without further ado, let's dive right in. And as always, you know, when we have crowds, events, when you have actual live audiences as opposed to the Apex, I always like to look at the crowd, and this is now back-to-back weeks. We've had 10 out of 10 crowds. The crowd in San Antonio, I'll go back there. Okay, 2 years ago, we gave them that absolutely awful card with Sanhagen and Vera. That was bad. But here, we gave them a UFC Noche event, and I like to think that they delivered. So I'm actually pretty proud of this UFC San Antonio crowd, and I think I'd go back here, maybe even for a pay-per-view, to be as bold as to say that. But we kicked off the night with our, what was it, Ultimate Fighter 33? I think this is the season 33 finale, our second finale in the men's welterweight division as Daniil Donchenko took on Rodrigo Cenzionanto. And to my surprise, I mean, I knew Daniil Donchenko was going to win, but I did not think he'd dominate in the fashion that he did. And honestly, Rodrigo Cenzionato looked pretty good coming out, but once we got in here, it was all Daniil Donchenko. Rodrigo was hunting for takedowns, was able to land one. Daniil was able to get back up, was piecing him up on the feet. In the 4 minutes, 27 seconds that this took place, 39 significant strikes to 10, 42 total strikes to 10. It was domination from Daniil. I mean, the striking was well. He had some, you know, interesting, like, takedown attempts. He had some good stops. But overall, you know, I will say Rodrigo was just hanging his chin out there way too much. Daniil was just putting the pressure on him. Eventually, he was able to drop him, land some ground and pound TKO. Kerry Hatley had seen enough, and he stopped the contest. And Daniil Donchenko, very impressive. Make that his fifth career knockout and his seventh round one finish. 13-2 now, and he'll be headed to a UFC contract. How about that? How about that contract coming in for Daniil Donchenko in the men's welterweight division? I'm excited to see who they throw this guy against. There's a lot of options. You know, I don't know, him being from Ukraine, who he particularly trains with. I don't really know, but I do know is that last weekend we had Renat Fakhrudinov take on Andreas Gustafsson. I feel like Andreas versus Daniil would be a very fun fight. And Daniil, he's 24 years old. He is super young. I know Andreas is 33, so he is a bit older. But I still think, you know, for the welterweight division, this could be a super fun fight. And there's also guys that come to mind like Uros Medic, because I feel like we should test this guy to some extent against some welterweights. Heck, you could even give him an Elizio Zaleski dos Santos. You could give him a number of people throughout the divisions. But great win for Daniil. I don't know if they're going to sign Rodrigo Cenzionato. I feel like they always give like the runner-up at least one opportunity in the UFC, so maybe they'll give Rodrigo a chance, but if anything, I think Rodrigo will end up taking on someone coming off of The Ultimate Fighter. You know, not The Ultimate Fighter, Dana White's Contender Series. So when we look at Dana White's Contender Series matchups, I think he could maybe fight someone coming off of that, but kicking off the card, big finish. I was very happy with that. Then, you know, we had the women's bantamweight matchup between Montezay Rendon and Elise Pereira, and it showed that Elise Pereira was only 19. You know, being that it was a split decision, wasn't that bad, but Montezay Rendon will get crushed by any other women's bantamweight. I kid you not. So 30-27, 29-28, and Junior Camija scores at 29-28 for Alice. The split decision goes to Montserrat Rendon. Round one went to Alice. You know, it struck her 14-11, defended four takedowns, went well. Round two, Montserrat just outstriking her a bit more significantly, 20-10. Alice attempted a poor takedown, had some clinch control time. Round three, just one significant strike edge for Montserrat Rendon, 14-13. Could have gone either way. But I think 30-27 is ridiculous. Gino Garcia, get him off of judging. But at the same time, it doesn't even matter, because Elise Pereira is clearly not ready for the UFC, but she's already in here. It's kind of like Chase Hooper, kind of like Roller Rosas Jr. He's already in here, so I'm sure they'll give her another opportunity. Someone that comes to mind is Arina Alexeva in the women's bantamweight division, someone who's just clearly not the highest of levels. And as for Montserrat Rendon, gosh, I'm going to be honest, I have no idea. I genuinely have zero idea who she could take on. Maybe someone like Chelsea Chandler or Priscilla Castueda, you know, is someone she could take on. They're coming off of losses/wins. But overall, very lackluster fight. This was very boring. And Elise Pereira, if anyone can have like another younger woman's bantamweight, maybe she takes on Chelsea Chandler. But overall, I think she's just not ready. I still think she's ready. And to be fair, she's 19. She could leave the UFC for a decade and come back at 29 years old in her prime. So long way to go for Elise Pereira, but Montserrat Rendon wins a split decision. After that, Alden Correa schools Alessandro Costa, and I stand corrected on Alden Correa. I didn't know anything about him coming in, but a +330 underdog cashing right off the bat. You love to see it. Alden Correa will improve to 11-3 and pick up his fifth career knockout and 10th career finish. Wow, dude is a finishing machine. The win streak is now at 4. Yeah, did everything he needed to in this contest for Alden. I mean, just anywhere this went, he had him. Outstruck him 20-10 in round one, defended two takedowns. Round two, landed two takedowns, all right? Survived two poor, you know, submission attempts from Alessandro Costa. Then round three came out, and Alessandro just didn't even look like he wanted to be in there. I mean, his corner should have thrown in the towel after round two. I mean, Alessandro was gassed. He wasn't even throwing anything. I mean, Alden really probably could have gotten a highlight reel knockout had he really tuned up. But yeah, Alden gets it done. Unfortunately, we predict this fight wrong, but I was pretty happy. Pretty happy with Alden Correa. I think he's going to do well in this men's flyweight division. I don't really know who is next for him, per se. I mean, I'm trying to think of some unranked flyweights, because I don't really know if he's ready for the rankings. I mean, you could always try him against the Bruno Silva, but there's always a Sumedarji. Sumedarji's on a two-fight winning streak. Recently picked up a win, which I think could be good. This could also be a good fight for someone like Loner Kavanaugh, but I think they might try and build him back up, per se. There's always Andre Lima's. I mean, depends how high of a level they want this guy to fight at. I think that's my question. It's how much do you want to test this guy? Because maybe even someone like Kai Sakura, if we want to give Kai Sakura one last shot in the UFC, this could be someone who he takes on. So, good win for Alden Correa. And as for Alessandro Costa, I mean, after watching him here, I know that he's gone win-loss since coming to the UFC. But coming off of Damas Quintero series where he got a contract off of a split decision win, he's gone 2-3. So he hasn't done too much, and I'm thinking when we talk about the Andre Limas of the world, we talk about these guys coming off of Dana White's Contender Series. I know we've had a couple flyweights this season. I think those are going to be who's next for Alessandro Costa. I don't think someone who's really talented is going to be what's next for him. So that's what I got, but Alden Correa trains at a good gym, been doing good lately, and he picks up a finish in his UFC debut, so can't complain about that. Then, next up, the middleweight division, Zachary Reese, Cedric Dumas. There's no better way for this fight to end than a 51-second nut shot where Cedric can't continue. Now, this wouldn't be as good as it is. This wouldn't be as entertaining as it is, I should say. If Cedric had been talking all week, about how he has no money in his bank account. He has $23 to his name, and he can't survive a nut shot. Now, I'm not saying, hey, I've never taken a nut shot from a professional fighter and then expected to continue. But, you know, I will say being hit with a nut shot and not continuing is a rarity in MMA. Mind you, it was the first one, too. And I think this should just be, you know, I saw a lot of people saying, like, we could just run this fight back. No, I just say we cut Cedric with this. I mean, come on. He has been awful. Just awful in the UFC. He's 10-3 now with a no contest. And oh, that's his professional record. In the UFC itself, all right, in the UFC itself, he's 3-3 with a no contest. So he's really not done anything exciting. He has no finishes in the UFC. He's never been close to getting a finish in the UFC. So I say we just cut Cedric with this. I mean, if anything, you can just re-sign, have him and Zachary Reese run it back. But if anything, I want to see Cedric Dumas get cut and Zachary Reese can take on, I don't even know, literally anyone. Literally any unranked middleweight he can take on. How about Jack Hermanson? That's a pretty high-level fight, actually, for Zachary Reese. We could test him. How about Jack Hermanson versus Zachary Reese, just to give him a little test, if you will. But yeah, piss-poor fight here. Do not recommend. And I've said that twice now on the podcast. Maybe that's the word of the podcast today, piss-poor, because that's what some of these fights were. Next up, Jesus Aguilar versus Luis Garule in the men's flyweight division. And Luis Garule, not up to the standard. Jesus Aguilera outschooling him, just as I predicted. A plus 180 underdog. Jesus Aguilera gets it done. 30-27 and 2 29-28s give him the decision. And yeah, I think maybe you could have given Luis round two, but overall, you know, I thought Jesus did enough throughout the entire fight. 85 cinnamon strikes to 65, 87 soul strikes to 73. He goes 1 of 5 and then defends 5 of Luis Garule's takedowns. This was an okay fight. I'll say this is probably more entertaining to watch it, like, live happening, because there's always the threat of a finish. But really, this would say Jesus Aguilera just showing that he is levels ahead of Luis Garule. Jesus will improve to 12-3, and in terms of his UFC run, he's 4-2. 4-1 his last 5. This was a big win for him. This was a really big win for him. He had lost to Rafael Estevan back in February, and now coming in, getting a win at 29. You know what? I could even see him being the next opponent for Alden Correa as well. You know, I can definitely see that. Maybe even Alessandro Costa he could fight. But Jesus Aguilera, 12-3 now. Good stuff. As for Luis Garule, came in 10-0. He's now 0-2 this year and has really not done much. So I don't really think there's anything left for me to see from Luis Garule unless we feed him to someone coming off of Dana White's Contender Series. That's what I'm going to say for everyone. Or even he could take on, who is it, Joseph Smith? I have no idea who won on the Ultimate Fighter. Actually, we can see who won the other Ultimate Fighter fight because it was at UFC 319. Joseph Morales. That's what it was. Joseph Morales, who is the 14-2 flyweight who won the Ultimate Fighter. He can take on Luis Grueli in his debut to see if he's up to par. But Jesus Aguilar, you know, maybe Alden Carraya, maybe in someone a bit higher of prestige, but good win for Jesus Aguilar. Next up, women's strawweight action, and oh my goodness, just boring. Just boring, boring, boring. Oh my gosh, did I pick a fight incorrectly that I thought? Claudio Poole has lost to Joaquim Silva? I did not. I'm sorry, we're going to get into that fight in just a second, but wait a second. Did I do my predictions correctly? I'm just learning something right now. I might have tallied myself up wrong. I feel like I thought Claudio Poole has won his fight against Joaquim Silva. One, two, I went two, three. Oh my gosh, I might have three, four, five, six. Never mind, I did go six and seven. Okay, I did correctly tally up myself. I'm so sorry. I'm so confused here. But real quick here, before we talk about Joaquim Silva and Claudio Poole, which I completely forgot about to say for the least. Tatiana Suarez and Amanda Lemos went down next. And yeah, that fight happened. I mean, Tatiana Suarez just grappling. Just grappling Amanda Lemos. I mean, Tatiana Suarez has nowhere else to go. Nowhere else to go from here. I mean, if this is literally where she's at now in her career, this is rough. 3 of 12 on takedowns, 9.5 minutes of control time. The most entertaining moment of the fight, probably Amanda Lemos going for a guillotine in round 2 and then round 3, where she literally had Tatiana Suarez wobbled with a minute left and just didn't capitalize on it whatsoever. But Tatiana Suarez wins rounds 1 and 2, loses round 3 at the end. This was just awful. This was actually so boring. So freaking boring. It killed me. It really did. 23-7 strikes to 20 in favor of Lemos. Total strikes goes to Suarez, but she was not hunting for a finish whatsoever. I was more impressed that Tatiana Suarez defended 9 takedowns. All right, that's what I was more impressed with, because the pressure of Tatiana was just drowning and Lemos was doing everything she could. But Lemos loses, but it's always a weird image where she ends the fight as the one, like, hammering on Tatiana Suarez. So you could maybe say she tried, but Tatiana Suarez back in the win column. She's now 12-1. You know, what could be next for Tatiana? As I look at the top of the division, as I look at everyone, you know, people are saying maybe Tabitha Ritchie. She's ranked in number 8, which is a tinge low, I'll say. But to be fair, Tabitha Ritchie is on a little streak as of late. You know, she's actually 2-2. Wow. Okay. But she did get a win over Amanda Ribas earlier this year, knocked her out, which was impressive. But I think she'd get grappled by Tatiana. It's always Yasmin Lucindo, but she just lost to Lemos. I don't know what to do with Tatiana Suarez, if I'm being honest. You know, I'd go as far to say maybe we have... Dude, I have no idea. I don't know what to do with you, Tatiana. How old is Tatiana? Tatiana Suarez is 34. Tricky to say. Very tricky. But she hasn't fought Jan Chionin. Even though Jan Chionin just lost to Virta Jandidova, let's just make that. Number 3 ranked Jan Chionin can take on Tatiana Suarez. This was just boring. This was really boring. As for Amanda Lemos at 4, she can take on Lupi Godinez at 6. Or even Tabitha Ritchie at 8. Just because, why not? But yeah, this fight happened. It was dull. And my only takeaway was that Amanda Lemos almost knocked her out at the end. Then next up, here we go. Joaquim Silva, Claudio Poole. This was a split decision. I have no recollection of this fight. I don't know if I missed it or something. But take us through the fight. Round 1, Claudio Poole is 2 of 3 on takedowns. 4 minutes, 22 seconds. Joaquim Silva didn't land a single significant strike. Okay, round 1, Claudio. Round 2, Joaquim outstrikes him 11-6. He's taken down once for 55 seconds. Okay, maybe looks like Joaquim. And then round 3, Claudio Poole goes 1 of 8 on takedowns and is knocked down. All right, and Joaquim Silva takes away a split decision. I'm going to be honest, guys, I do not remember this fight at all. I'm actually so perplexed how I have no recollection of this fight. But Silva at 36, picking up another win. Professional record's now 14-6. He's gone win-loss since 2021, and he hasn't won back-to-back since 2017. So Joaquim Silva, this could start a new little run in the lightweight division. I think I have your next opponent. His name's Diego Ferreira. You can fight him. Or even Rafa Garcia. How about Joaquim Silva and Rafa Garcia? Have they fought before? No, they haven't fought before. Boom. More matchmaking on the same card. As for Claudio Poole, 3-fight losing streak. Hasn't won since April 2022. 13-5, cut him. Goodbye, Claudio. Goodbye. I have no more need for Claudio Poole in the UFC. Like generally, maybe we could have him take on, gosh, someone coming off of DWCS, like we've been saying all along. But other than that, no more from Claudio Poole. Joaquim Silva, good win for you. yeah, this fight happened. Then we closed out the prelims, finally predicting something correctly. Dusko Todorovic submitting Jose Daniel Medina. This was just as simple as Jose Medina never belonged in the UFC, and this was just more evidence of it. I do have to say, Dusko Todorovic going out and getting his fourth career submission, very impressive. And out of his 13 wins, 12 finishes. And it snaps a 3-fight losing streak. I'm happy for Dusko Todorovic. This fight was just as simple as, all right, on the feet, Dusko's outstriking him a bit. Oh, he takes him down. Oh, he gets back up. Oh, he takes him down. Oh, he is locked in a perfect rear naked choke. And that was that. Dusko gets the win. So Dusko will remain alive in the men's middleweight division, but I always worry they're just going to feed him to someone. I really am. You know, I just don't really know how far he can go. So, if anything, maybe Zachary Reese did fight Dusko Todorovic. Has Cedric Dumas fought Dusko Todorovic? No, it's okay. So, that could always be a fight we do next. So, Dusko, good win overall. I think the more so thing is, how did Jose Medina get into the UFC? He lost the Deoist Guitar Series and went 0-3 in the UFC. And he's been knocked out and submitted in round one, both in 2025. So Jose Medina is 100% getting cut for Dusko. I think the question is, what do we do next with him? He's 31. You know, he's a Serbian. He's a finisher. He's also prone to getting finished. Tricky, tricky stuff to decide. But good win for Dusko. With that, we dove into the main card. And we start off with Santiago Luna and Quang Li. And it's safe to say no Minnesota fighters are going to find any success in the UFC as Quang Li is dispatched by Santiago Luna. I had no idea who Luna was, and I had to eat my words. Quang Li, not a good underdog pick, as Santiago Luna gets his third career knockout, and his 100% finish rate is now at 7. Good win for the kid. I mean, he's only 21 years old. Coming out here, knocking out Quang Li, very impressive. I mean, simple as that is that Quang Li couldn't handle the power, shot for a takedown, didn't have any success. There was some control time on the cage. And then, yeah, once he just got in the open court, he dropped Quang Li. Quang Li got back up, trying to survive, got dropped again, and that was night. Goodbye to Quang Li. I think your UFC run will end there at 1-3. That may do it. But for Santiago, just getting started. Just getting started for this kid. Bantamweights, we love to see it. As for Santiago, who could he potentially take on? There's unlimited bantamweights. There's literally unlimited bantamweights. Let's go last weekend to Paris. Was there a bantamweight? Okay, there wasn't a bantamweight on that card. What about, let's try in China. Any China bantamweights? Su Yong Yu won. Su Yong Yu is 16-3. He is 30 years old. He is 2-0 in the UFC. Oh, he's 3-0 in the UFC. That might be too big of a challenge for Santiago Luna, but it is a name. It is a name he could take on. So, Santiago Luna, you're a killer. You're a savage. And I regret not picking you. I can admit when I'm wrong. I can admit I wish I would have picked you, but I didn't. I rode with the man from Brooklyn Center, which is right near me, like a couple towns over in Quang Li. So, Quang Li knocked out in round one. Not going to get it done. I think that'll do it for your time in the UFC. After that, we got it going again. There we go. We're picking fights correctly. Alexander Hernandez knocks out Diego Ferreira. If you had told me earlier, start of the year, that we were going to see the turnaround, career turnaround, not just turnaround, but the career turnaround of the great ape, Alexander Hernandez, I would not have believed you. But lo and behold, this guy just knocked out Diego Ferreira in round number two. I can't even believe it. I really can't even believe it. I mean, Diego Ferreira had been finished, I think, 3 times in his career, all of them by knockout, but he'd been finished 3 times in his career out of 25 professional fights. He hadn't been finished since 2021, and here he is, coming out, and Alex Hernandez just brings the pressure. You know, round one, dancing around a bit, finish each other up, and then round two, he just cocks Ferreira with a straight, and that was that. Some beautiful follow-up, which I think might have put him out fully, almost put him out fully, but it certainly did the job, and Alex Hernandez, good freaking work, kid. This is going to extend the winning streak to 4 straight wins. Very impressive. The knockout streak to 2, and he's 3-0 in 2025, and he's calling for a fight before the end of the year. I absolutely love it. 32 years old, 8th career knockout, 10th career finish. And, you know, what if I were to tell you, at one point he was 1-4 and needed to beat Austin Hubbard to save his career, and he did. Then he beat Kurt Hollibaugh, and now he's since knocked out Chase Hooper and Diego Ferreira. 2 great names. To have in the year 2025. They are just fantastic names to have. So, Alexander Hernandez, I don't know what to do next with him. He called out Michael Chandler. Is it wrong? I would love that fight. Can we do Michael Chandler? Can Michael Chandler fight in someone coming up and an up-and-comer? Can he do that? Can we have that fight take place? We could even have him fight Mauricio Ruffy, you know, at 15. You know, I think Grant Dawson at 14 might be, you know, a stylistic unadvantage. But, hey, Michael Chandler at 12, Mauricio Ruffy at 15, Grant Dawson at 14. I would love to see any of those fights for our boy Alexander Hernandez getting it done. Very impressed. As for Diego Pereira, he's 40. Two-fight losing streak. You can call it. You know, I don't think Diego's going to call it, but you really could. I don't really know who he has left to fight. I don't know if Clay Guida's retired. Does anyone know if Clay Guida is retired? Because if Clay Guida is not retired, how about these two fight? I only want to see him fight aging veterans. All right, and he's fought in Michael Johnson, and he's fought in Beneil Dariush, and he's fought in guys like that, but maybe Rafa Garcia, if anything. But yeah, I think Diego Pereira should either retire or just fight someone close to his age bracket. If he keeps fighting younger people, he's going to get knocked out more. But Alexander Hernandez easily getting one of the best finishes, especially like for your career on this card. Good stuff for the great ape. After that, middleweight division, Kelvin Gastelum missed weight. Calvin Gastelum missed weight, and every time he misses weight, I swear he somehow wins. I have no idea how he did it, but he did. Calvin Gastelum beats Dustin Stolfus after missing weight, and dude, Calvin has the worst cutting I've ever seen. This dude, he misses weight so often. 64, Sinvin strikes a 57 in favor of Dustin Stolfus, 69 total strikes 58. Dustin goes 1 of 6 on takedowns for 2 minutes of control time. Calvin dropped him in the second. That was probably the most close round. But other than that, it was pretty much Calvin had the power. Dustin had the, I guess, more shots being thrown. He outstruck Calvin by 10 in round one. Calvin outstruck him by 3 in round two. And then they both landed exactly 20 total and significant strikes in round number 3. And Calvin Gastelum picks up the victory. Good stuff for Calvin Gastelum. He is legit been win-loss since 2021. Wow. Wow. Calvin, I don't know what your ceiling is. I don't even know what to do with you. 33 years old, middleweight division. If you can't make middleweight, you go up to light heavyweight? Probably not. So, middleweight, Calvin Gastelum, you know. How about Dusko Todorovic versus Calvin Gastelum? Why? Because they're on the same card, and it's easy to match make. Or, well, we could have Cedric Dumas take on Dusko Todorovic and Zachary Reese take on Calvin Gastelum. Now, that I could get behind. That I could support. But Calvin, good stuff. His record improves to 21-10. Good stuff, Calvin. Is this like his certain number fight or something? He's 13-10 in the UFC. Now he's 14-10. As for Dustin Stolfus, 2-fight losing streak makes him 0-2 in 2025, and he is currently 3-7 in the UFC. Yeah, Dustin, there's not much to do with you. There is not. I legit don't even know. I think cut Dustin. I'm not even going to say anything next for Dustin Stolfus. Your time in the company, I think, has drawn its course at 33. You got to go. Then we had a lightweight matchup between Rafa Garcia and Jared Gordon. And this is just the info that you'll just never know, is that Jared Gordon apparently had gotten a car crash this week and messed up his leg. He messed up his leg, but it didn't stop him from not only winning round one, but also winning round two over Rafa Garcia. Before halfway through round three, he got clipped with a hook. Down he went, got some nasty ground and pound inside control, and Rafa Garcia gets the victory. Wow. Just wow. And Rafa Garcia, it's only his second career knockout. How about that? Good win for Rafa Garcia. His nickname is Gifted or something like that. I mean, I don't know. It wasn't that most entertaining of fights, but good win for Rafa. 2-0 in 2025, 2-fight winning streak. He's 4-1 in his last 5. He's 6-2. In his last 8. Oh, he's actually 6-4 at the UFC, if you want to actually go with that. But Rafa, he's been doing all right. I'll say, you know, he's 31, still some time to enter his prime. But I mean, if Alexander Hernandez doesn't get ranked opponent, Rafa and Alexander could be a good throwdown. Joaquin Silva versus Rafa Garcia just screams a matchup you should make. Yeah, a lot of options. As for Jared Gordon, you know, if you're good in a car crash and then you're going to fight, I think it might be time to hang it up. I don't know. 37, he's had a good run. He's 21-8, but if the injuries are going to keep piling up, it might be time to call it quits for Jared Gordon. But if you are going to stay, there's always Claudio Puelles. There's always a name like Claudio Puelles for you to fight. But yeah, decent fight overall. Good win for Rafa Garcia. Good stuff. 2-fight winning streak. Then we got to the co-main event, and this is going to be the first division shaker that we see. It's probably the biggest thing that's happened in a while, as the number 9 ranked Rob Font has lost to the unranked David Martinez. David is 27 years old. This is going to make it 9 straight wins in a row for him. He was originally supposed to fight Carlos Vera, who is notoriously not a good fighter. Carlos Vera pulled out. Then, on short notice, steps in Quang Li. Alrighty, he's going to take on Quang Li now. A bit higher of a competition than Carlos Vera. Then, Raul Rosas Jr. has to pull out to injury, and he gets the co-main event shot against Rob Font. And I am so glad they gave him this decision. He won round one, you know, just from just outlanding more. And Rob Font came back and won round two. But then round three, he dialed up and he broke Rob Font. I physically watched Rob Font break out there, and it was kind of satisfying to see. I can't even lie. 30 significant strikes to 23, 50 total strikes to 23. I mean, you had Rob Font shooting for takedowns 5 times. Didn't even land any of them. And Dan Martinez was getting in his face. He was egging him on. He was then slipping. He was then power-shotting him. And I was like, this dude is impressive. And Dan Martinez is going to go from unranked to ranked at number 9. Now, Rob Font was ranked at number 9. I don't know if they're going to debut David Martinez at number 9. They may debut him at 11, but they may put Ahmed Zahabi and Henry Cejudo over him, which, by the way, I have no idea how Henry Cejudo is in the UFC rankings. I actually just noticed that. Henry Cejudo hasn't even won since coming back. He's lost to Aljo, Merab, and Song Yadong. So why is he even in the rankings? So why is Marcus McGee in the rankings? Dude got outclassed by Petr Yan. So David Martinez, we can debut him at any spot right now, but an excellent win for David Martinez. And this was only his second fight in the UFC. Samuel Oliveira to Rob Font to that'll be ranked number 10. Crazy. For Rob, first loss since December 2023. This snaps his 2-fight losing streak, and he did not look good here. 38 years old. His age is showing, and the New England cartel has completely fallen apart. It is in shambles. So what's next for Rob Font? I'm going to go with Vinicius Oliveira. I think Vinicius Oliveira is next for Rob Font. Maybe even... No, I really like the Vinicius Oliveira pick. And as for David Martinez, people are saying maybe Marlon Vera. But there's also guys like Marcus McGee and Kyler Phillips if we wanted to kind of have him fight someone else in the lower half of the top 15. But if we want to make him prove himself, Marlon Vera's up there. Mario Bautista and Umar Nurmagomedov, whoever loses that could be an option. There's a lot of stuff to do there. But good win for David Martinez. Probably one of the bigger upsets on this card. With that, we went into our main event, ladies and gentlemen. And this was the greatest main event of the year. The greatest fight night main event of the year, I should say, because oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Diego Lopez, Gene Silva, fight of the night and performance of the night for Diego Lopez. Crazy. Crazy. The number 2 and number 10 guys in the featherweight division showing out. This was insane. I'll tell you what was more insane, being a Diego Lopez fan, because I was watching with my mom and she was kind of like, yeah, Gene Silva looks kind of scary, but I'm like, no, trust. Trust in Diego Lopez, the lone cowboy. He had the mullet, he had the stash. He looked like a bad ash. And round one, I mean, Gene Silva clearly had the power. Gene Silva clearly had the power advantage, but we forget as to how good of a chin, just how good of a chin our boy Diego Lopez has. 43 significant strikes to 10 in round number one. Diego Lopez set up a takedown beautifully on Gene Silva, catch him off guard, was in top mount. I do have to say it was so impressive for Gene Silva to survive top mount against Diego Lopez, but he ate a lot of strikes. 86 total strikes to 43 in this contest. 50 came in round number one against Gene Silva. So Gene Silva got dominated, he got cut open, he was bleeding, and Diego Lopez was looking good. Then we transitioned to round number two. Round number two lasted until 12 seconds left in the fight. 33 significant strikes to 31 in favor of Gene Silva. But Diego Lopez landed 2 takedowns. Gene was able to get around them, but he was landing really clean. And I have to say, you could tell the hard shots were landing at Diego Lopez. And they kept saying, like, oh my gosh, Diego Lopez is wobbled. He never looked wobbled at all. He was just eating really hard, really clean shots. Shots that would have put out Charles Jourdain. Shots that would have put out Melsik Bagdasarian. Shots that would have put out Bryce Mitchell. But know who they didn't put out? The number 2 ranked Diego Lopez. He eats these shots. He eats these shots. And honestly, Gene Silva's getting the better of him. And then out of nowhere, Gene Silva just like starts like running at him. And he starts like trying to hit him with some spinning elbows. And he keeps trying to lean in. And as he's going in to get him, Diego Lopez hits him with a spinning elbow. Drops him, lands some nasty ground and pound. I mean, Gene Silva's face was gushing so much blood. Ref had to step in. I think it might have been Mike Beltrani. He was like, this is it. Call it. And Diego Lopez gets his 11th career knockout, his 23rd career finish. And he is just such a bloody freaking legend. Great win for Diego Lopez and a humbling pie for Gene Silva. Gene Silva's 13-fight winning streak snapped. And that means every single fighting nerd has gone 0-4 after you know, being on this run. Once they finally fought a tough opponent, they went 0-4. You watched. You know, obviously the biggest bounce back has been Carlos Prates, but he did lose to Ian Garry. You know, and he's going to be getting an opportunity to enter the top five before the end of the year, but he did lose in his first test. Then you had Benoit Saint-Denis, who was tested with, or you had Marisa Ruffi tested with Benoit Saint-Denis, and he crumbled with the pressure. Kyle Barallo faced the toughest test he could against Nazarene, couldn't get past it, and Gene Silva was given Diego Lopez and couldn't pass the test. So Diego Lopez gets a round two TKO, round two knockout. It was beautiful. The first time in Gene Silva's career he's ever been finished. But yeah, Diego back in the win column. First win, believe it, since September 2024. It's been a full year since he had won. Such a weird thought to think about. But yeah, dude is so action-packed. He's so fun. He's ranked at number two. And I think the big question next is, who do we matchmake all these guys with? Like, what do we do? So we'll start with Gene. And for Gene Silva, it's pretty simple. You got Josh Emmett, Yusuf Zalal fighting. He could fight the winner or loser of that. You got Brian Ortega. He could fight Brian Ortega. You got Arnold Allen at six. He could fight Arnold Allen at six. Let's look below him. David Onama, Danny Gay, Giga Chikadze. He could legit fight anyone. I think Gene Silva can hang. I really do. I think he was, you could tell he was so emotional this entire fight camp. And he started to fight emotional and it bit him. And it hurt him. And that was the end of the road for Gene Silva. So if I had to pick someone, you know, Gene Silva, Patricio Pitbull's looking for an opponent, but he's kind of cut. So I'm actually going to go Josh Emmett. I think Josh Emmett, Gene Silva, it could one day be a dream fight. And if we can make it happen now, let's do it. But you, if you wouldn't believe it, Gene Silva's only 28. He's got a lot more time to bounce back and become a champion. As for Diego Lopez at two, it all depends. It all depends. There's a number of people in featherweight. There are six men in particular. You have Volkanovski, the number one ranked Moser Evlov, the number two ranked Diego Lopez, the number three ranked Yair Rodriguez, number four ranked Leroy Murphy, and the number five ranked Aljamain Sterling. Everyone else is not in the title picture. And it comes to, how do you match make these six men? What are the two match? What are the three matchups that you make out of this combo? And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to match make them here. So Diego isn't going to get a title shot. You know, I don't think he should get one. But there's three options here. There's Aljo, Leroy, and Yair. All right, he's not rematching Mosvar just yet. That should be for the belt. You have Yair, and I think the Yair one is the one I want to go with because I think it would be the most fun. I think it would be insane because they hate each other. Yair hates him, and watching Yair get finished by Diego Lopez would be so satisfying. Now, the Leroy Murphy one, I don't really think anyone wants that. I think it's Leroy Murphy takes on Volk or bust. That's really what I think is going to happen. But then, if we do those matchups, we can't have Mosvar and Aljo rematch. Like, that's only the last person Mosvar beat. So that doesn't make sense. So here's what you're going to do. You're going to have Aljamain Sterling and Diego Lopez fight. And I think we're not going to get the Yair and Leroy fight. You're actually going to have Yair Rodriguez take on Leroy Murphy, and you're going to give Mosvar the title shot. People are going to be like, Mosvar doesn't deserve it, but I think we should just give it to him. You know, I think we should stop delaying it. He's 19-0. He's 9-0 in the UFC. I don't care what anyone says. That is impressive unto its right, and I think he should be rewarded with a shot nonetheless. So, Mosvar versus Volk, Diego Lopez versus Aljo, and Yair versus Leroy. That's what you should do. Now, if you do lead Diego and Yair, I will not complain whatsoever. If you give Diego Lopez a title shot, I won't complain. But yeah, it was a freaking wild main event. I mean, it had me out of my seat. I was going nuts. And in fact, Diego Lopez 1-2 was fantastic. This was my best fight night main event of the year. Was it the best event? It might have been top five fight nights for sure. But I do think the Paris event as a whole was better. We just ran into some boring duds, you know, like Montserrat and Donnelly Sparrow, boring. Cedric Dumas and Zachary Reese, the no contest, that was boring. Jesus Aguilera, Luis Carulli wasn't awful, wasn't the most exciting thing. Tatiana Suarez, Amanda Lemos, boring. Joaquin Silva, Claudio Pérez, boring. All right. Alexander Fernandez, Diego Ferreira, entertaining. Santiago Luna, Quang Lee, entertaining. Dusko Jose, entertaining. And then Calvin and Dustin, not the most entertaining. And Dave Martinez, round five. At the end of the day, it was just distance striking for three rounds. So overall, UFC Noche, was it the worst UFC Noche of all the three? Yes. But that's like saying the last two have been 8 out of 10, so this was a 7 out of 10. You know, so success overall. We got a lot of fighters walking away. I believe they gave Santiago Luna, the 21-year-old, a 50K performance bonus, which is probably super high for him at 21 years old, getting 50K bonus. And yeah, overall, good stuff. Excited to see what's next for each and every one of the fighters. As what's next for us, ladies and gentlemen, well, we take this upcoming weekend off as it'll be WWE Wrestlepalooza, which we will be dropping our predictions on the next episode. We will also be recapping week three of, we'll be recapping Dana White's Contender Series episode 6, and we'll be giving our week 3 three predictions for the NFL. And I'll even maybe even do a little mini recap on our two Monday football games. But in terms of our next UFC, we then go all cylinders firing until Thanksgiving after our break. We head to Perth, and the Perth card is looking pretty good. Absolutely loaded with fights. As of right now, it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 fights. And I think they're going to try to get up to 17. Wow, insane. Carlos Ulbricht, Dominic Reyes. And the main event, Yosef Jr. Tafa, Ivo Aslan on here. Jack Jenkins is in action. Jimmy Crute's in action. Jake Matthews takes on Neil Magny. Tom Nolan, Justin Tafa, and a new heavyweight debuting, Louis Sutherland. Navajo Sterling, Rodolfo Bellotto is a banger. You have Loma Lukbumi and Alexa Thanera, Jothan Mikolaev and Oban Elliott's in action. Colby Thicknesse is back. Jamie Mullarkey's back. You have the debuting Michelle Montoya in the women's bantamweight division. Debuting heavyweights in Brandon Parrish and Alicia Ellison. And you have a man who fought on either episode 2 or 3 of this past season of Damas Contender Series, Cam Ralston, making his debut against Andre Petroski. UFC Perth is going to be fantastic. And then, of course, after that, we're then going to UFC 320 in Las Vegas. Then we go to Rio for Oliveira and Fazeev. Then we get Randy Ritter and apparently a short-notice replacement because apparently Fluffy Hernandez is out. You know, British Columbia, going to need a new main event in Vancouver. Hello. Then UFC 321 in Abu Dhabi. Then we're at the Apex. Then we're in New York City. Then we're in Qatar. And then we go on Thanksgiving break. And then it's UFC 323. Then we have UFC Vegas 112. And then the year's over, just like that. So appreciate the days you have. Live presently, ladies and gentlemen, because time just seems to fly by, in my opinion. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I will send you all on your way. A lot of fun in week two of the NFL. You know, I went 4-2 on my fantasy football teams, which isn't too bad. And I have potential to go 4-2, I think. I think the potential is there, but I have lost officially in two leagues, unfortunately. So with that, I will see you all next time on the podcast. You know, make sure to, you know, say your prayers, get in touch with the Lord. Just so you all know, Jesus loves you all so much, and he has such great plans for your lives. And even when, you know, times are struggling, even when you don't know what's going to happen in the world, you know, you can lean on him, and you will find peace, and you will find encouragement. You may be like, oh, Zach, you know, that's super silly, but you know what? Don't knock it until you try it, because it is one of the most positive things you can do in your life. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll see you next time on the Surprise Jeb Podcast.